Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're continuing our clinical focus on gluten, and I can think of no better qualified expert to discuss this theme with us than Hoffman Center nutritionist, our very own Layla Mutin, registered dietitian, has earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition, and on a daily basis works with patients, counseling them about dietary choices and nutritional strategies. So, Layla, welcome back, and let's continue on the theme of hidden sources of gluten. Here's one that I often get a lot of questions. You know, people say, well, you know, I don't eat bread. I eat aseen bread, you know, or
aseen bread, the sprouted wheat.
Sprouted wheat, yes. So,
yeah, I used to eat that back in the day, yeah,
right.
When I was...
It's like a very, very dense bread, but at least, you know, it's and it's sprouted.
Freezer, yeah.
So what could be wrong with that?
Well, it's still wheat, and it's still a gluten source. It doesn't really matter that it's sprouted.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit of the same thing as wheatgrass, what we're talking about. But there are many, many hidden sources of gluten. From everything from frozen dinners to gravies, it's even in ice cream.
Whoa.
Of that nature. So we really have to be sleuths. It's in candies, candy bars, bouillon cubes and bases, all kinds of things.
I think it probably is in cookie dough ice cream. You know, that's a cookie. That's a flavor of Ben and Jerry's cookie dough ice cream.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's wheat in that.
probably.
Right.
But there isn't in Haagen-Dazs. So.
Right.
No, but you know, glue is the glue. It helps things stick together and all of that. That's why it's desired in many of these prepared foods,
right?
And condiments and bases and things. You know, seasonings, certain soups,
right.
And you have to beware of language like natural flavorings and things like that. Artificial flavor, artificial color. We have to beware.
Right.
People think that couscous is a separate grain.
Right.
Couscous is pasta.
Yes, exactly.
Couscous is just simply pasta, and people are surprised.
And what's that other one? That's
that.
It's the orzoni, or what's called it? What is that? It's like an Italian, like it looks
orzo?
Like
orzo,
it's like right?
A rice. It's
orzo,
like rice.
Orzo. Yeah, it looks like rice, but it's wheat.
But it's pasta. Yeah, it's pasta,
yeah, okay.
Which is shaped like exactly
orzo,
and that's
right.
What couscous is too. Those tiny,
exactly.
Tiny grains.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So here's another one. You go to a Japanese place and you have a choice. You know, they have I love noodle dishes there, and you have a choice of udon or soba. Mm-hmm. And I will choose soba. Udon is wheat noodles, and soba is buckwheat noodles.
Yes.
But then I look at some of these buckwheat noodles, and hello, they're like 80% buckwheat, and they're 20% wheat, right?
Yeah.
So
they
I mean,
the gluten. The gluten helps to hold it together, and that's what. Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd
fall.
So we
really have to be sleuths, and we even have to ask.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, and but this is confusing for a lot of people. A lot of people go, well, buckwheat, that's wheat, right? And that you can't have. No, it turns out you can, right?
You can. Just because it has wheat in its name, buckwheat is actually a different species.
But who eats, you know, pure buckwheat? I mean, only like, you know, are people with Eastern European Jewish or Eastern European background eat kasha. But
I grew up on kasha. My mother made it all the time. Yeah.
But you can have the kasha, but you can't have the varnishkas. Because the varnishkas
I don't know what that is.
Well, they mix like noodles with the kasha. They mix there's a flat kind of squarish pasta that they mix with the buckwheat, and then you get like that's called kasha varnishkas. That's a traditional Eastern European Jewish dish. But if the plain buckwheat groats, that's okay. That's a real Russian Eastern European thing.
Eat it like a side of rice. It's a wonderful side dish.
It is great. Yeah,
just to have the kasha.
It's a terrific grain.
And
I think it's also a kind of a low. It's a low glycemic index grain, somewhat too. It's not that it doesn't release the carbohydrates.
Until you make a buckwheat pancake with it. Yeah.
Ah, there you go.
But there are really a lot of sources. One thing that occurs to me, processed meats, vegan or vegetarian burgers like soy burgers, mock meats, modified food starch. Now, people have to be careful. There's so many people on a very low-fat kick, and they'll always get the low-fat version of the mayonnaise or the sour cream or the yogurt or whatever. But guess what? When they remove the fat from those products, they have to replace it with something else to bring back texture. The texture is what's missing, and often it's something like a modified food starch. This is definitely a gluten source.
Wow.
So this is a common conversation I have with many of our gluten-free patients who are still on a low-fat kick. I'm like, no. You want to get the real thing, not the low-fat version, because this is still a source of gluten
right.
for you.
Okay, how about corn muffins? Those have got to be good.
No, because it's a process. You have to really look at the ingredients. It's got to be completely cornmeal.
Exactly.
But normally, they will have wheat added.
I've been burned by that. Yeah, you get the corn muffins, but they're like half the first. Actually, sometimes the first or second ingredient is wheat flour, and there's some corn ad mixed in there to give it some flavor and coloring.
Right.
So again, I've made pure corn muffins. They're delicious, but you got to make them from scratch, and you can you can make them. Yeah. So those are sort of these kind of traps that are out there for people who are trying to be gluten free.
Now, for those who like to drink alcohol, this is also very important.
Okay.
The biggest source of gluten in alcohol is beer.
Oh,
more than
okay.
anything, the
barley,
the hops.
Sure. Yeah,
exactly. And you're not necessarily going to find a gluten-free beer at your local restaurant or pub or anything like that. Wines are generally okay.
Well, but there are some. I think there are some beers that are gluten-free. There's something called Red something.
I don't know if they're commonly served.
No, not commonly served. Yeah, you have to see.
Popular restaurants or pubs or anything like that.
Sometimes. There's one called Red...
Red Bridge.
Red Bridge,
that's by Anheuser-Busch. Red Bridge beer
is
one, but I know there are many others.
However, it's full of carbohydrates. It's not low calories. It's full of carbohydrates, and it's actually yeasty, too. So for those with a yeast problem, it's not great.
They're all yeasty, and I think the Red Bridge beer is made from sorghum.
Okay.
So which is gluten-free, which is fine.
That's actually sort of like African, that's an African grain that is they make beer traditionally in Africa from sorghum, so that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to hard liquors and I've had this debate with many, although some of those with celiac are maybe taking it a little bit too far. The spirits, the hard liquors, the whiskey, the scotch, the vodka, the gin, gin is from juniper, that's a whole other thing. But because many of these liquors are made from grain, they assume that they're gluten-containing, but the distillation process itself removes the gluten. It really, really does. Although I do have a handful of gluten-free, either celiac or gluten-intolerant patients who will only get the potato vodka.
Right.
The Chopin vodka.
I think it's so purified. I'm not sure that there's hardly any residual.
Yeah.
But a drink like rye whiskey, may be problematic for some people.
Maybe.
It is. Some people in the allergy field believe that the tiny residues can trigger allergic responses. Certainly for people with allergies, clear alcohols seem to be better tolerated. White wine more so than red wine, releasing less histamines. That could be an issue.
Another thing that occurs to me is people with hay fever, especially the grass allergies, Kentucky bluegrass, Bermuda grass, all of those grasses, when they embark on a gluten-free diet or even a grain-free diet, but just specifically a gluten-free diet, they find that their hay fever starts to get better. And there is a relationship because the grains come from grasses.
Right.
And hence coming
the
back
cross-reactivity.
To the grass issue. Exactly.
Cross-reactivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like some people are allergic to grass, but when they eat grass, and I ask sometimes people facetiously, I say, do you eat grass? And they go, what are you, nuts? And I go, you are eating grass because every time you eat a grain, it's a domesticated grass. And they go, whoa, I'm eating grass and I'm allergic to grass, so that's not a good thing. So, I have to say, though, that for some patients who come in with gluten intolerance, celiac disease, we actually put them on a more extensive elimination diet. And the reason is they can probably ultimately tolerate rice or corn or, some of the non-gluten grains. But actually, sometimes to repair the gut, we will put them on a paleo diet or a specific carbohydrate diet because the gut is so damaged that it's just not enough to simply eliminate gluten.
It can't handle all those polysaccharides. And
I think that's one of the things that's missed in the traditional field of gastroenterology. They'll say, okay, fine, go on a gluten-free diet, see the nutritionist, because the doctors don't know from that. They're happy to turf the patient to the nutritionist, and the nutritionist
says...
You know
what really makes me crazy, Dr. Hoffman?
Yeah,
what? Oh, go look on the internet.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Go Google it.
Right.
Oh, no.
And then, I have to say, you know, very frequently we'll see people who are celiac or gluten intolerant, and we discover they're not really on fully compliant with the gluten-free diet. They're,
yeah.
They're, and because out of either carelessness or misunderstanding, mm-hmm. they're really not achieving optimal wellness because they're missing the boat.
Yeah. Speaking of very, very hidden sources, prescription medication.
Oh, thank you for mentioning. Yeah, what?
Yeah.
That's very pervasive. So what's going on with that? And we, you know, and sometimes patients have serious medical conditions. They require certain medications. Sometimes the medical conditions are caused by their celiac disease or gluten intolerance. And then they're fully compliant with the diet part, but they're taking pills mm-hmm. that are made with starch. What's
when
up with
I
that?
When I look through my PDR, I keep coming across, you know, the filler of starch is 80% of the medication.
It's ubiquitous, yeah.
So, yeah, it's ubiquitous. So I think these folks need to have their medications compounded or find a gluten-free version.
Right. And the compound pharmacies really do a good job for us on that. That's one of the reasons why I'm very dismayed that the federal government and regulators are clamping down on compounding pharmacies, which offer patients with unique health problems an option. You know, like, for example, you may have medication for your colitis that is, you know, full of gluten, and ultimately you may want to order medication that is gluten-free. The problem with that is that it's often very expensive. It's not covered by insurance. And this is part of, you know, one of the real flaws in the system.
That's true.
But we do this routinely for patients who are, mm-hmm. are gluten sensitive. Mm-hmm. So it's although I have to say a lot of health problems resolve when people go gluten free and then they don't need their medications. Another issue I just wanted you to touch on briefly, because I know you're an expert on skin products, and we actually have a wide range
yes.
of.
I'm glad you're bringing that up.
Yeah, we have a wide range of actually gluten free skin products. What's up with that? You know, what's the big deal? You know, put some, like, something that has a little powder or starch in it on your skin or makeup.
Our skin is our largest organ, and we do absorb things through our skin. Let me first make an example of aluminum. When we cook with aluminum cookware, we're not necessarily ingesting it through our stomach, the aluminum, but we're ingesting more aluminum through our antiperspirants. That's in all of our deodorants, our underarm antiperspirant. So we have to be concerned about skin, especially with those who present with dermatitis herpetiform formis.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is the skin celiac, right?
Right. And it's the word herpetiformis. It sounds a little like herpes form, and mm-hmm. these lesions are almost like little herpes outbreaks on the skin, sometimes little pustular lesions blistery kind of skin surface eruptions that are due to gluten intolerance. And we've had a kid recently who came in, and we diagnosed him as having celiac disease. And he had a history of what was termed acne, but it was on his back. And he said it really wasn't like acne. It was like little blisters or little pustules. He probably had dermatitis herpetiformis and was erroneously treated with powerful acne drugs for a condition that could have been alleviated by him stopping gluten intake. It was sort of really misdiagnosis. But anyway.
Yeah, and with regard to skincare, we have to be concerned, although Peter Green doesn't necessarily agree with what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have a skin condition related to gluten, at the very least, you want to make sure there's no gluten in your product, and there can be. And ladies, our lipstick, we have
yes.
to be concerned about our lipstick, because it doesn't just sit on our lips. We ingest it somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 5 pounds of lipstick a year.
Oh, give me a break. That's crazy.
Yeah, over the course of a year, that's how much we actually ingest. So let alone lead, it's a source of lead. But it also can be a source of gluten.
Wow.
So we have to be, there are other sources like envelope glue, possibly, although most are made of corn in the United States and other places in the world, it may not be. So there are a lot of things. Laundry soap.
Old-fashioned postage stamps. I wonder if they had gluten in them.
Yeah. So you want to get the self-sticking.
Right.
Exactly.
Which is now more the case.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So now, what about, you know, usually we issue a call to action for each of our intelligent medicine broadcasts. So the call to action, what are some of the resources that people can access to help guide them through a gluten-free diet?
First of all, getting a referral to a qualified nutritionist who is experienced in gluten intolerance and celiac is very, very important. But there is a good also online resource. If you go to celiac.com, that's also very, very helpful. Not for just for those with celiac disease, but for gluten intolerance as well. I think this is very helpful. But one of the first orders of business is do at home is to clean out the pantry, look for all the gluten sources there, make sure that you're not going to cross-contaminate, you're not going to use the same cutting board where you kneaded your bread dough to do other things.
By the way, Jews do this every Passover. They do this every they clean out what's called the chametz, which is the all the leavened products. So there's like a Orthodox Jews, observant Jews, do go on a gluten you know hunt every Passover to try and clear it out. So you know that's what you're describing is a reminiscent of those hunts that are done ritually before the holiday.
Yeah, and to also find the sources of the you know the gluten-free grains. What are some of them? We talked about buckwheat and rice and corn. People think corn is a vegetable. It really is a grain. So that's how we categorize it. There's millet. There's amaranth. Mm-hmm. There's quinoa. Quinoa is wonderful.
Right. I have a millet flax bread with my eggs every morning. It's really good. You know.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful. So there are all these alternative grains that many people aren't aware of, but are very, very tasty and flavorful. They're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
There's quinoa pasta, which is a wonderful gluten-free pasta. Not everything is made from rice flour. You know, in the gluten-free world, so many things are made of rice flour. And let me just talk about the gluten-free products for a minute. Gluten-free bread, and this is always a big debate. Most bread contains wheat or gluten, right? But gluten-free bread, yes, they're gluten-free, but they may be a little more what I call junky than even the regular bread.
Yeah,
because
they're all kind of sugared up, and they're kind of revved up with additives that make them more flavorful.
They're revved up with additives to help replace texture, but one of the other things that they use is they will introduce sugar into a bread, not to add sweetness, but to add what food scientists call water activity. It's a way to add back the moisture, because what's lacking in a gluten-free bread is that elasticity, the softness. A gluten-free bread will be more dense, will be more crumbly,
right,
and all of that. So it's an effort to bring back some texture.
Could one of those ingredients be carrageenan, which we think is particularly harmful for people with gastro problems?
Absolutely.
Right.
And carrageenan is derived from seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
You would think all is good with seaweed, but the carrageenan is problematic for a lot of people with digestion issues.
Right.
It's in everything. It's in ice cream. It's in your coffee whiteners and half and halves and all of these other things. It's in many supplements, unfortunately.
Okay.
So we're seeing that as well, you know, lower quality supplements. So
I'm going to try it right now, a historical first for the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm sitting here with my iPhone 6 here, and I'm going to ask Siri to find me a gluten-free restaurant. Let me see if it works. Hang on one second.
Okay.
This is an experiment, okay? So here...
Found a couple of places matching so cute. They're pretty far from you.
Gee, I don't know why she said that, but...
They're pretty far from you.
Okay, so...
Thank you, Siri.
Wait. Siri, find me a gluten-free restaurant.
Looking for restaurants named Gluten-Free Restaurant. I found quite a few restaurants matching Gluten-Free Restaurant. 14 of them are fairly close to you.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So she lists. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is amazing. I just hit Siri on my iPhone, and I got a list of 15 restaurants: Lexington Brass, Davio's Northern Italian Steakhouse, Nino's on 46th Street. It was a local Italian restaurant. Pizzarte,
wow.
Glazed Teriyaki Grill, Pip's Place, Gluten-Free Bakery on Easter night, Lily and Lou, Local Time, T-H-Y-M-E, Free Foods NYC. You know, I'm going to give plugs to all these places. But, hey, this is a happening thing. All you have to do is just press Siri.
Yeah, Siri, and if you have an Android, I think it's Cortana.
Siri, what can I have for breakfast?
I found quite a few breakfast restaurants fairly close to you.
Okay, Siri's going to send me to a breakfast restaurant. Thank you very much. But Siri can't tell me if my food has got gluten in it, so we're, you know.
That's right.
We're not.
So Siri, once they have an app, and I'm sure
I think
one's not developed already.
You'll be able to hold your phone over the food, and the phone will be able to detect the gluten in the food.
Oh, modified food starch here.
Yes, exactly. There will be an app for that. All right. So
right. Hydrolyzed plant protein there.
Once again, Siri comes through. All right. So great.
Yeah.
That's very informative for our listeners who are desirous of following a gluten-free lifestyle. If you think you might be sensitive to gluten, see a nutritionally oriented practitioner, get some advice, or hey, on your own, you may give it a shot. If you need additional guidance, excuse me, see a health professional. Thank you very much, Layla, for joining us today.
Thank
on the
you,
Intelligent
Dr.
Medicine
Hoffman.
Podcast, and I'll see you in the office a little later.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.